Right, it is on.
To order the regular meeting of the North Bend Planning Commission for Thursday, December 14th, 2017. First item is to call roll. Commissioner Heller.
Here.
Commissioner Von Trapp. Commissioner Gildersleeve.
Here.
Commissioner Miller.
Here.
Commissioner Ryan.
Here.
And Commissioner Lucky had communicated that he would not be able to attend this meeting. So we do have a quorum. Next item of business is to approve this evening's agenda. Do I have a motion?
So moved.
And a second?
Second.
We have a motion by Commissioner Gildersleeve, second by Commissioner Ryan. Any comments or changes? All those in favor of tonight's agenda, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. It's unanimous. Next item is the approval of minutes for November 9th, 2017. Do I have a motion?
I move the minutes be approved as submitted.
And is there a second?
Second.
So, motion by Commissioner Ryan, second by Commissioner Miller. Any comments or changes? Seeing none, all those in favor of approving the minutes for November 9th, 2017, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. It's unanimous. Next item on the agenda is public comment on non-agenda items. Is there a member from the public who wishes to address the Planning Commission on something that is not on tonight's agenda? Seeing none, we will move on to item number four, which is our introduction to the zoning map amendments concerning the extent of cottage residential zone.
Before Mike jumps into that, yes. This is a very, very short agenda, and we could save you guys a night at home and get you out of here real quick if you want to. And all we're going to be talking about is, because of your recommendations on the cottage zoning and that it would be reduced, we want some ideas from you. There's going to be a retreat that the council holds on the 23rd and the 30th. And one of the subjects on the agenda is to have a look at the zoning map and figure out, with all of these changes that are coming about and what permitted uses are going to be, and with the change in the cottage zone, I think the council wants to take a look at that. And there have been a number of issues we've brought up. One is, how do you get job growth here, and how do you get, and when you have a lot of zoning that kind of interrupts the EP zone and puts uses next to it that don't work real well, it makes us start to think, well, what can we do about that, and how can we get jobs here? And the other thing we've looked at is there's a lot of neighborhood business, and the council, even beyond what the commission did, looked at limiting a lot of uses there. And we've got so much of that zoning, the question is, what do you want to use it for? And what do you really think it should be used for? So there's some questions of growth, and as we grow, how do we accommodate a balanced community? And so some of those questions have come up, and I think it's a good discussion because, every year we do comp plan amendments, and we've got some coming up. Another subject that's going to happen is we did a citywide traffic analysis, and we're going to be bringing that to you. I think it's your next meeting?
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. And it shows how intersections are performing or will perform in the future. It shows where future roundabouts will go, and there's a comprehensive plan that we've undertaken and will stay on to not have traffic signals because of the tremendous amount of infrastructure that goes with it. You have to wire them together. You have to have a command center. You have to have people that maintain them. You have to have a traffic engineer at the command center, modulating traffic and adjusting signals. And you have free-flowing traffic when you have roundabouts. So once you've trained people how to use them, they're superior in a lot of ways. No long-term maintenance. But with the development activity we have, we're sharing with you our map on development activity and active projects, and we'll share with you also how they are contributing toward these traffic improvements that we're going to have. And I think it's really important because you're really the mouthpiece to the community when things are going on. They ask you, what's going on over here? What are you going to do about traffic? And I think we're getting ahead of that, and we're really laying some major improvements on people. And we've had to take some dragging and screaming, but we're having the private sector build those because it's much cheaper when you're not using prevailing wages. So you're going to see kind of what's the traffic picture today, and it's going to cause us perhaps to make some changes in our comp plan based upon the findings out of that. So there's some good information. It's basic, good information for you as planning commissioners that we'll be bringing to you in the near future. So I just want to give you a little update on that and where we're going. And Mike has done a tremendous job, and we will be bringing to you all of the legislative items that we have on our to-do list, and what the schedule is for bringing those to you and when, how quickly we think we can get them off the docket. So you're going to have kind of a work plan for the year to approve, and that'll give you a chance to know what's coming up in the future. So
it's quite hefty.
Yeah, it is. It is. But, you know, these guys, the staff here is tremendous. And where we when I came, we had the five moratoria. We got two left. By sometime in, at the end of January, or perhaps mid-February, they're all going to be gone. And my analogy here is that we're playing too much defense and not enough offense, and we're not going to score until we start playing offense.
Yes.
Question to you, Dave. Is the Economic and Development Commission not functioning?
Well, you know, they're very involved in this branding, and I think there is a lot of influence on trying to bring businesses in that reflect the brand. We're working with Plymouth Poultry right now. They almost walked when we gave them our requirements. And I said, wait a minute, let's talk about what works. You tell us what works, and let's see if there's some middle ground we can get to, because that's 150 jobs. You know? And the multiplier effect of that, of people working here on existing businesses, as well as the general community and expanding the markets we can draw people from, because we've got more wallets in the community, is really important. And I'm going to try to be working with the council to say, branding is important, but economic development is much broader than that. And we're going to try to bring some deals to them. We're actually going to bring the compromise deal that we want to do with Plymouth to bring them in and say, can you support this? But we're also going to have a benefit package with it. So many jobs, this much B&O tax, this much property tax, this kind of a multiplier in terms of how it'll affect businesses in the community, and give them the full picture. I think one of the problems is growth has been so all-consuming here that there's not a balanced view of what you need to put in your arsenal to be a good council member and take care of everything, because you can't pay for the things the citizens in this community want if you don't bring in enough money. And they are very demanding, and they're going to get more demanding because we're bringing professionals in that have money, and they want to be treated like they were treated in Bellevue or Redmond or any other place. So they're going to be looking for those kind of things, and we've got to have the money to be able to provide it. So we're going to broaden that whole
infrastructure.
Yes. And we're doing a lot with the infrastructure side of the thing, too, and we'll be talking to you about that in the future. We're getting into some areas with the Salal Water Co-op that we never did before because they couldn't produce the mitigation water and they want it from us. We know their general manager left and we don't know why. We know that they have some inadequacies in their system, and they serve most of the areas that will be our new development in the future. So we've got to make sure that they're sound. So we're working on that. We're getting information to the Department of Ecology and the Health Department. We're forging new relationships with their board, and we're trying to say, how can we help you build a more robust water system so that we don't get the rug pulled out from under us? So we're really concentrating in those areas. And I think we're doing the right things, but you have a lot of growing pains when you're this size and people want to be here. And we don't want to lower the bar or dilute the quality of the community, but we want to be healthy economically. And so we're really going to try to make some inroads. And, you know, we've got an Economic Development Commission. We've got an Economic Development Manager. And I really want them to amp it up and help us get some of these businesses into town.
Get those empty buildings on Main Street.
What's that?
Get those empty buildings on Main Street open and running.
If you get more wallets around here. And we do have people proposing projects in the downtown. And we've had to make some deals. Mike did a brilliant thing. We had one development on Park and Main that we had to take more right-of-way on because we need to do some improvements on Park to be able to get some left turn lanes in. And we own some land on the other side. So Mike sat down and he said, well, what if we do a different site plan, because theirs doesn't work anyway, and we do a little lease or a license agreement and give them part of that land that's doing nothing now. He drew this site plan up. We had him come in, and Mr. Garcia was the representative, and he said, I've never seen this attitude from North Bend before. This is the most creative meeting we've had with you guys. And they were thrilled, and they went back to the council and to the mayor and to the city administrator and said, we like what's going on. So there's an appetite for this. We just have to feed it, you know. So we want to see more offense. You know, we don't want to be defensively dealing with issues that won't get us our our vision for our growth or won't bring us the things we need in the right way. And so we're going to try to turn that around a little bit. So a little different philosophical approach.
So real quick, the 23rd and 30th retreats, is that posted on our city calendar or on our website somewhere?
It should be. It should be. Yeah, I'll have to talk to the city clerk. I don't know. Where do you recall where they're going to have it? I think it's at a facility that isn't in downtown, but I don't recall where it is, but I can let you all know. And it's going to be interesting because they have so many issues that they weren't do a one-day retreat. So.
And I had the good fortune of growing up in New Jersey in the Somerville Circle, which intersected a couple of highways, and it became metered because of the volume. Now, obviously, we don't have highway intersections, but sometimes in front of QSC, you could think that it was the way some people are going around and speeding. So I don't know if at some point we would want to allow ourselves the chance to meter a circle so that it promotes the fairness of people
right.
in and out.
Well, I think you'll see some traffic improvements right at that location that Mark is working on now. And we're doing a heck of a lot of work in the traffic area because, you know.
Well, I'm just saying,
yeah.
allow us that option
right.
to have a metered circle. That's all.
Okay.
No, I thought you wanted. Okay. All right, so appreciate that. Mike, zoning map amendments?
Yeah.
Can you give us an area?
So this should be fairly quick. Again, thank you guys for getting through the cottage regulations, and that was absolutely fantastic. Study, but they were not able to get to that agenda item on the work session just right before Thanksgiving.
They were buried in permitted uses.
Yeah, so the table that you guys have made recommendations on for allowed uses and some of the performance standards, they spent a lot of time going through that, and they're going to finish that up at just the next council committee, CED council committee meeting this next week, and then hopefully that will go on to council and be done with that. So for the cottages, what we're hoping to do, though, is bring them forward, the package that you previously provided on the cottage amendments, and then also bring your recommendation on what the cottage zone should be now, so we can tie it all up in one nice package and send it along and get it adopted.
Like make a note that Siobhan Travis arrived.
Yeah, yeah, I got that.
Thank you. Pardon my tardiness.
So you had talked about, when you were discussing the cottage regulations, that the cottage zone right now is too big. The principal idea of cottages being near the goods and services of the downtown area was really key to the types of residents that want to buy cottages. And we had drawn that circle around the intersection of Ballarat and North Bend Way, and within 3/4 of a mile would allow within the downtown commercial and the low density residential zone. That's what we're going to do. It extends down that way, all the way, quite a ways, all the way down to 432nd. And so, what I did in your packet is provided some aerial photos of those specific properties. And just as a starting point, I made a suggestion that you consider stopping the cottage zone just before, and I didn't draw this on a map, a big map, but it's in the packet, just before the properties that front to Stilson Avenue. And so the properties that would front to Stilson Avenue, which the cottage regulations actually suggested remain low-density residential, so we could rezone that at that point to low-density residential and east from there. So all of that block between Stilson and 432nd. It says 436 there. So there is 436th would be low-density residential rather than cottage residential. That's not going to have too much of an effect. It affects one large property. The other two properties, it's the cottage development currently, and the other one is the church, and that's not going to change uses anytime soon. So really you're just talking about the one large property. It's 5 acres, so you could see approximately 40 units of cottages developed on that property. That could be a fairly large cottage development, but it is, again, quite a distance from the downtown where you generally want to see cottages.
You're talking about the single-family home in the corner?
The large property, here, if you look at the map in your packet, You can see in the outline there, it says rezoned to LDR,
yeah,
question mark. And it's the large property that's just to the west of the cottage development.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
There's one quick question I had on this. Remember from when we were discussing the Dalton property, changing the zoning, is that going to put this, affect it in that way? So meaning, if it was out of compliance with the zone, is that going to, they were saying that was going to affect, that could affect their financing.
Their concern was because they had a development application submitted, they vested to the existing regulations, but the regulations were being changed on them, and so they were then considered a non-conforming use. And that was the concern for their financing.
So would that apply to this?
No, because nothing is submitted at this point. So anything that would be submitted would be submitted under the new development regulations and the new zoning.
Just a little editorial note to that. Their issue, as they articulated it to me, they can get construction financing. I think they self-finance at that end. They have quite a body of investors that will do that. But the problem they get into is if they want to go to permanent financing, and pay off their obligation for the construction loan, because you get better financing. The construction financing is higher, it's more risky, and it puts them in a very difficult position to have banks consider long-term financing if they're non-conforming. So I went to our CED committee, which has some of the folks that were adamantly kind of against the high density in that location, and they came to the committee and they said, this is our issue. So if we perform and we're vested and we need to come back after we do that, would you entertain making us conforming so that we can get our long-term financing? If we don't build, we understand that this reverts back to the EP2, and they don't mind that. But they say, when we get to the point where we need financing, would you assist us? And everybody said yes. So the council member said, once you perform. And I have a feeling that even though this has been a real touch point for people who don't want it, it's probably the best designed project I've seen for this community. And once they build it, I think people are going to have a different impression because it's very, very attractive. It's very well done. And I'm hoping that, see, if you're processing things and stopping them and you don't get anything done, then nobody can look at what will happen if it builds. In my experience in many communities, I work for very strong growth control communities on the coast of California. Once things get built, people have a different attitude. In fact, I can tell you, in a couple of communities where people adamantly opposed big box stores, they were the first ones in when it opened. And so I'm not saying we should advocate for that kind of thing, but if you have a really well-designed project and you have a great need for rental housing, I think we can change some people's views of things once it's built, because it'll be a major positive contribution to the community.
The river was diametrically opposed when it's being proposed.
What's that?
The river was
diametrically
opposed in the early 90s. There was
They
were standing at the gate, don't turn their force into this community. Well, the community has one of the nicest in the area now.
Mm-hmm.
But so it proves your point.
Speaking of community, if you look at this map, what do you see? On one side you have residential, on the other side you have commercial all around it. And so in between was cottage, right?
Yeah.
So the question our commission has to answer is that correct or should it be something different? And I think across from the church, the clearing and grading has already begun for Chinook lumber.
Mm-hmm.
I think on the opposite side, on North Bend Way, you have cottage existing homes, some of the smaller homes, or it's commercial. And so it's really looking at on Cedar Falls Way, where we have the bulk of our residential and some condensed, high-density, kind of low-density residential in Cedar Falls, and then you have LaForest Homes, and then you have a school. So blending that all together and thinking about a community and balance, or I guess diversity in housing, how would you want it to look?
I
think at the last meeting, I thought we should leave it as is for now. I guess one thing looking at it, I mean, there's already a cottage. I mean, one's a church, and then it's already, you know, not the cottages that we're going to build in the future, but they call those cottages, and then so we, and to change it to LDR seems a little odd, since it's just built. And then you have a huge lot. So I can see that in the drop that we decided to get rid of, that's what Mike was referencing, that's kind of how he said, even though I think we got rid of it, so it may not be valid.
You got rid of it, but the provisions are still in the regulations there that the homes, okay. Or the lots fronting to Cedar Falls Way would be, or okay. Stilson.
And that, I could see leaving that. I guess my first thought is to leave it as it is and just pass it to the council. And if they want to change it, they can change it. But if we do want to make a change, there's that big lot that we could keep as cottage. You know, like, I'm not sure. I don't have the big vision like Gary was talking about. It's difficult. You know, there aren't, you know, across the road in North Bend Way, there could be future businesses in there.
Or mixed use.
There is a school right there, so walking distance to a school is nice. And that's the one big lot. So I'm just like, well, you know.
Well, keep in mind, if you're on the opposite side of Cedar Falls Way, now you're crossing a pretty major road. So, because you're required to walk a mile away.
Right? Yeah, because basically, I mean, there'd have to be some crosswalks.
Yeah, and crossing guards. And
But they'd probably go.
Flashing up. Intersection.
I mean, it's not too far to cross where there'll be a roundabout there. And so we'd have a. Like hopefully a flashing light kind of stuff, and they'd be slow. So hopefully with a roundabout, you go into it slower.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Well, I really appreciate your thoughts, especially on what was just built, and you know, some of the thoughts on the area. Anybody else?
I'm hesitant to change it right now, mainly because we have a lot going on, and. That strip is transitional between North Bend Way, really, and the single-family residential that's on the other side. And I think that it's one of the few places that we have a reserve of land that could become, you know, not the necessarily the high density that we see with apartments, but where we could have more families as more to live. And it's not necessarily going to develop. I kind of want to let it percolate for a little while. Mm-hmm. And see what happens and let some of the new projects settle out. And I'm particularly interested because one of the biggest concerns with that strip is the traffic. And I heard very clearly that we have some ideas to plan for traffic in the future. And I think we need to hear a little bit about that and see how that's going to come into play with what needs to happen along that road.
Well done.
Okay.
I would have a clarifying question for both of you. So you feel that keeping it a zone cottage is going to delay development in that area, or I guess I'm not hearing you right.
It's not so much that I think it's going to delay development in that area, but I think that we have so many changes going on, in particular with a new vision of what cottage is, and we also have the potential for one of the biggest issues and concerns in that area. Being addressed by this more specific long-range transportation planning, which was mentioned at the opening of the meeting, that I kind of want to just let it sit for a little bit. And that doesn't necessarily mean that we're not going to have development occurring, but I don't necessarily want to change things around. I want to sort of see what happens.
One of the things that's happening to us, I might may help you a little bit on the thought. I'll show you a couple of areas. We have a lot of different people coming to us with projects. We have an individual that's coming to us with a townhouse project here, and we don't want to have residential in the neighborhood business zone. But that means there is demand for some townhouses. That's an interim, you know, it's ownership, it's commonwealth, it's a different housing type, and it's kind of in between high density and medium density. And we also have, where's the other? There's another townhouse project.
It's on Portland Lane.
Portland Lane. Either side of the street.
Yeah.
So it's closer to the downtown. It's a little more dense than what you normally have. And I can tell
tell you that one of the things we have to be very mindful of is the practical constraints that we're seeing. Our little cottage project in the downtown has stopped dead because the stormwater requirements and what he ran into when he was working on it, he's run out of money, basically. And I don't know if the investors are going to stay with him.
Which one?
Yeah, that's the one that's right downtown here where all the pipes are coming out of the ground.
Okay.
Right down.
Here, just a second.
Well, they had to dewater that thing, and they put so much money underground, huge vaults, and it's only five residential units. Oh. Now, can you spread those costs over that kind of? And we just have to be mindful that with this high groundwater in the downtown area, it's very difficult to build there. And everybody's saying, well, let's get all the density down there. And there's some practical things we just have to accept. I mean, they exist. There's no way around them. And that has been kind of a lesson to us. Well, what does that mean for development? What can we do to make that land more useful? And the groundwater table during this time of the year is 3 feet down. So when you put vaults down there, they have to go float if they're not heavy enough. And how do you have them be an effective groundwater storage unit when your water table's that high? So I think some of the things when you're thinking about land uses, we need to think about the vision of the kind of community you'd like to see here, but we have to feed you some of these practical considerations so that you at least are aware that there's some real challenges where people want to see things happen.
Scott, I drive by that vault twice a day, 5 days a week.
Well, that was full during the last winter. We could see the top.
And even with the backfill, it didn't drain around it.
Right. Considering what happened in the existing in development, as far as the tree retention, my concern is changing this without, because we still haven't addressed that section of.
Well, we did in our cottage zone change the tree canopy retention requirement.
Right. But there was still, my understanding was, work to be done.
And that's one of the next agenda items coming to the planning commission.
Mm-hmm. So whatever's, I guess my prerogative would be, until we can get that done, limiting what could happen here. Because, I mean, this is a place that we've identified as a corridor. And this is, you know, specifically the trees along Cedar Falls Way.
Well, that is in the cottage standards that you've
and Mike, is there anything in low density residential that is that strict as far as tree retention?
The current tree retention requirements are 30%, and what was discussed previously is getting rid of the allowance to reduce below that with limitations. Right now, you can go below that if you can show
so
that.
So it's in low density. It's what was in cottage. So in other words, if we change it to low density, you would have then a chance for total clearing like you just did.
Okay.
That's what I was saying. Yeah.
No, I appreciate that because that's kind of where I'm trying to get with all this.
Not that the council has passed our vote yet.
No.
I think the real struggle, and I see it from the comments that you're making, I think it's important to do what you can to retain as many of the heritage trees as you can. The problem is that if you have enough constraints on development in here, what you're actually going to do is prohibit it. And if you want infill or you want to be more concentrically growing, those areas that are closer in, are more desirable to have folks from the standpoint of all of the planning arguments that we've made. but you might just be creating a reserve in some of these areas. So it's not an easy problem to solve. So, but I think you're identifying what the conflicts are, and I think that's important when you get into the discussion. But we've noodled this thing, and we didn't come up with a real quick and easy answer either.
So something, Scott, I think you brought up with the map that we used to have in our document, the blend of low density and cottage that you guys had worked on, Mike. If it was designed low density, it could have the cottage infill like you put in the map, or no, keeping it
not outside of this
radius, you would have the cluster in low density. So in cottage itself, the way that it's designed is to have the clusters of cottages mixed with low density in between them. So if somebody bought these few lots together and did a major development, you would still have a blend of or a mix of cottage and low density. As
you might see low density mixed in. They're not obligated to do that. They either
separate the cottage clusters
with open space or with single family.
Okay. Back in Dave, any thought being given to changing our city model?
I haven't heard of it.
To get up under that.
Easy to reach, I believe.
No. The fact that we want to be a sports mecca.
Recreation destination.
You know, it's nice to have that maybe as an alternate, but I think we need to be something that says more of a work environment rather than play environment.
You know, I think where we can reinforce that philosophy, we should, but you're not going to get REI here. You can get Heartland here. How many people are there out there in that industry that we could capture? And we'll continue to try to, but they're going to be a part of a mix because the economy has to accommodate more employment of different types. And one of the things that we're going to try to do, I was just talking to Dawn for a minute. She's working with the city managers group in Washington, and they're working with, I think, Evans University. It's a business school. And I told her that we wanted to go to the business school at UW and put together a computer, a software, that when you put in the type of business it is, how much retail sales they have, how many employees they have, what the valuation of the improvements is, it would spit out on the other end any tax advantages, property tax, B&O tax, do a multiplier effect with, give them the incomes, how's that going to affect the community, how's the buying power going to increase, and be able to take these proposals and analyze them from an economic perspective in terms of fiscal impact. Because single family loses money. It has to be subsidized by other land uses. It doesn't pay for itself. The property taxes don't, and the initial costs don't. And so you balance it by your retail, your taxes you put on room rates for hotels and things like that.
Manufacturing.
Yeah, and it all makes it work. And the thing I'm concerned about is that we have a diversified, and you're not in a position where the first thing that goes down in a recession is recreation.
Yeah.
It's the first thing that goes. And you want to have a diversified economy so that you can continue to provide the level of service that people want here. And we can get people off of these commutes off the roads because you can live and work in your community and you have a job housing balance. So that's kind of where we're coming from. And we've got a lot of work to do with the council because they are, you know, split on the issue of do we want to be totally a recreation community and not allow anything else? Do we not want growth? How much growth do we want? And the fact of the matter is if you don't have not a crazy amount of growth, but in the job area, if you don't have some kind of regular growth, you're going to have budgets that look really bad and you're going to be cutting services and you're going to be cutting all kinds of things that people expect you to provide. So I'd like to look at it more from not only the balance of the right uses for the community, but the fiscal health of the community. Because, you know, as we get larger, the demands are going to grow. And we're going to have to be able to feed that demand.
So are we actively seeking light rail to come out here?
I don't think we are. And, quite frankly, I worked for VTA, which is the transportation agency in Santa Clara County, and I can tell you that the funding for light rail, if it's not funded locally, is not going to come from the federal government anymore. And light rail in the 90s, at least in Santa Clara County, cost $100 million a mile. And so if you look at carrying people, bus rapid transit and some of these others are much more effective in moving more people for a lesser price, and you can move routes without moving tracks. So light rail is a real tough one because, you know, it has a great allure when you look at it, but when you look at the actual cost to, and how much ridership it takes to support it, it's pretty tough.
Mike, wasn't Jenna on the committee for a while for Sound Transit or something?
No, that I'm aware of.
Okay. I must have, I spoke to her about it, and I think we approached light rail in the wrong way, thinking about it as a commute option in. I think we approach it as the Sound option out to recreate, and that if we can sell that to the light rail, then we have an option to maybe get it all the way up to Snoqualmie Pass and ski, right, is get that line back in service. That to me would be an argument I could go make. It has nothing to do with supporting our population commuting in. It's all about how they get to recreate and come out here in a more sustainable fashion, right? So if you were going to advocate, that would be
Yeah, I think from a I worked on the BART extension, and I worked on a couple of light rail projects, and the problem that you find with them, too, is the ridership has to be so robust to support it. The fare box never does, but it's got to reach at least 20% or it's a bust. And they had the lowest ridership in the United States. What they were doing, my job was to go out to the park and ride lots and put intensive residential so that people would get out of their cars and jump right on the train to where they were going. We also were trying to influence colleges and destinations like hospitals and services to locate along the lines. The land use patterns have to support light rail for light rail to happen. And in a very dense urban area, you can make that happen. It's really hard to do it out here. But it is a very desirable place to be. And I think a lot of the millennials say, I'm not going to go where the jobs are anymore. I'm going to go where I want to live. And if they're going to bring the job, I'll find something. So there's a whole different, you know, ethic going on right now. And a lot of folks that with the tech companies locate in the big, sexy cities because that's where all the younger people want to be, right? But what they don't realize is that when those people meet somebody and they want to start a family, they can't afford to buy a house there. So where do they move? They move to places like this. So I'd rather see, and I'm on a task force for affordable housing. The mayor's, I'm in, on the staff support group, and he's on the actual task force for the Puget Sound area. And I kind of shook people up because they asked if I'd give a presentation of how the rural communities are dealing with affordable housing. And one of the things I said is I don't understand why you don't have the large corporate entities in this area at the table. Because if you're going to make things happen, they need to be behind it. And it's government over here and business over here. And who's causing this housing thing? It's these large tech businesses that are bringing people in with incomes and hordes, and we can't house them. And they're displacing and gentrifying places and pushing people out and raising the price of housing. And one of the people that has been in this area for many, many years and has tried to forge this relationship said our biggest problem is they don't know how to dance together. And that's really kind of sad, you know, because the only reason Silicon Valley was able to solve some of these problems is they formed a leadership group of the largest companies in that area, and they got involved in regional government, and they lobby for things to help transportation issues get solved and to help affordable housing issues get solved. And I think I'd like to see that, because what could happen from that is they have the technology to distribute many, many functions in those businesses, and they could locate in these smaller communities and bring those higher income jobs and allow people to disperse that impact. And then you could live and work in your community. The jobs would match the housing here. They'd have the incomes to buy the housing here. And I'd like to see that promoted, because I think that would help with transportation and housing problems. And those are the kind of things that we need to see happening at that level. But that digresses from this. But I it's really difficult. This area is really a difficult one to come up with a really easy answer on for land uses. So we just kind of wanted to have a a spirited discussion and see what you guys thought about it.
Mike, my only question, I guess, is to understand the depth of it, where we were talking about the lots on Southeast North Bend Way that were so deep that it might say that you could have a mixed-use set of housing types on that lot as you went further back to the river. You know, is there, I guess, any way we could do or should consider a blended zone so you kind of have more intense on North Bend Way and soften towards Cedar Falls?
I guess just my initial thought on that is that it may not be big enough for that, just by the time that you mix in multifamily, and that you also have the Tanner Trail corridor, so that is a little bit of a separation between North Bend Way and what could happen within the development itself.
In our traffic analysis, are there any recommendations for speed limit changes?
Yes, there are. There are a couple of them. And they do deal with some areas that I don't know exactly where they are, but I've heard the discussion. And it's really healthy to lower speed limits. And, you know, as we put these roundabouts in, we've got one coming right where River Run is. We've got one coming in where the Dahlgren project is. And as we put more of those in on these major routes, it's going to slow traffic down.
Yeah, and I think that makes a difference the way you think about land use, too, right? When you understand the change in the traffic takes it from a rural area to...
Those roundabouts will help. The rules around roundabouts will help traffic until you get a meter, like Gary is saying. People just get nose to nose, there's no letting people in. And so you get the stream of the traffic patterns are now in 12-car bunches, and they just make it run from the next circle, and they just occupy it.
That's a lot similar to what you have with signals, you know, because you queue up, you get a green, you go.
It doesn't seem that way. It doesn't seem that way when you're in the circle, trying to find a space to get through. No one seems to give a damn about your interest to enter the end of the fray. You know, they just block you off.
Well, part of it, I think, is a part of it, at least in my experience, is getting people used to them and getting people able to negotiate them. Because the hardest thing in the world is to get your first roundabout in the community. I've seen more uprising over that than any other issue in some communities. But I've also seen communities where they've done several of them and people kind of learn how to work with them. And I think the problem of manners in driving goes way beyond roundabouts. We in Folsom, we had 6 lanes to 4 lanes to 2 lanes, and because we got in an older area where you didn't have the right-of-way. And I said, by gosh, we've designed for aggressive driving. We've just designed the worst situation for aggressive driving. And we found out that we had too much capacity on the 6 lanes. So we took the outside lane, and we looked at a separated landscaped area with a bike lane, better pedestrian area, and a nicer front to the businesses to slow people down and to have more of a common thread of the same number of lanes through the thing. Because everybody's fighting to get in front, and you just encourage bad behavior when you do that.
Oh, I have a comment about that roundabout. Where Fury Siteworks is, it's directly next to it. I know the flow of trucks coming and going through town right now is pretty dramatic with Tanner Pit going on and all the projects all over the Seattle area. That's how transit comes up here. It dumps their loads. But this area is going to be so massively important to review the traffic flow. That area itself, based on the amount of trucks that will come and go, and that won't stop quite a while. Mm-hmm. I mean, so we need some sort of change there. I think that's probably the most smartest way to go, my thought would be. I'd just like to see the way that is presented. And I think people are going to have to take a long time to get used to how to work with numerous trucks coming through. We haven't seen that as much, so we're going to see it, I think. So it will be kind of a dramatic.
It's like the grade of school buses at you know, the school times coming through, where they're kind
of the day
tight together to keep everybody in line.
Yeah. I think for me, since we're chatting around the bus, I've had pretty good experiences with them. And I'm glad to hear you say we're not going to focus on traffic lights or anything like that. so much traffic that like one or two cars move. Hopefully it would never get here, even get that way, even if we put traffic lights on. Mm-hmm. But I mean, that is like the worst thing. You just can't find the patience for that. It's just, I don't even know.
Well, you've got that happening on the highway here, our only light. And we can't influence it because WSDOT isn't interested in listening to us. They've got bigger fish to fry. And if you want to see the level of frustration of roundabouts versus signals, sit at that. The traffic patterns around here are changing dramatically because of that intersection. If you're in the south end of town and you want to go to the downtown, and you take Google Maps or you take the Verizon version of that, it will tell you to go on the freeway. It will tell you it's 4 or 5 minutes quicker. And people use that to direct where they're going, and they avoid traffic congestion. So the one thing you do get out of roundabouts that I like is you get a continuous flow. And if you do have a delay, it's a much less delay than waiting through two signals or three signals if you're coming, you know, from Snoqualmie and coming up, was it? Yeah.
Shopping at QFC the way I do.
Mm-hmm.
Shopping at QFC the way I do, I cannot get out onto the road. Cannot get out on the road until I just decide he'll stop for me if I get out there. I only hope he does. But I just cannot get out there. You can't convince me it's working.
Part of that is the design that they're planning for the new roundabout that's going to be at Downing there. So the idea is that we're going to create a median to prevent turning movements on there. So if you want to come out of QFC, what you do is you turn right. If you wanted to go to your house out of QFC, you turn right, go towards downtown, around the roundabout at Downing, and then back out.
Kind of like the post office.
Yeah.
If I can get out. Mm-hmm. I still have to get out into the road.
That's just a capacity problem. Beyond just the design of that intersection.
There's points of the day where it's pretty much a steady stream, either mm-hmm. in the morning or at 3 o'clock.
But there's a level of learning that will happen.
Yeah.
There's just obvious. Mm-hmm. So, and frustration comes with people understanding or misunderstanding how to motivate. But the street light thing, it's too expensive to go there, and probably wouldn't work anyway.
I don't understand the gridlock of street lights. You don't need to survive that one.
You're stuck.
A half hour to go to 4 o'clock.
But they get a lot of pass-through traffic that goes through their downtown.
Right, but then all the lights back up, and you can't take the turns that you need to. If we can avoid that, that would be awesome.
Any more questions for staff on this cottage zone?
You know, I'm noticing, maybe it's construction related, but I'm noticing that right through that little cottage zone, just to see what's going on. People are double parking in the driveways, blocking the sidewalk. I don't know if they're being asked to do that because the construction crews come in the morning or not. But if that's the parking habits that we're generating, it's the wrong way to go. You can only get one park for short driveways, but they're double parking, which means they're blocking the sidewalk and they're tangling the street. And I saw that multiple times over the last couple of days. I just thought I'd drive through and see what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm hoping it's related to construction requests to give us room to park our gear. Mm-hmm. I'm hoping that's what it is. But if it's not, if there's some rule against parking in the street in cottages.
That's something that we could have the police come by and talk to residents about if it is a continuous problem.
Because you're blocking pedestrian traffic. Mm-hmm. It's just, mm-hmm. it looks.
It's kind of hard to tell if how much of that's construction related. I think you're right, and how much isn't. And until we know that, we couldn't have the police.
Is there no parking on that street because it's narrow? I mean, that's what I'm wondering about.
I think one of the things that's happened, and I've seen this happen in a lot of communities, that our profession's guilty of this. Planners jump on the bandwagon like lemmings, and when they get something saying narrower streets are better, we need to make them narrower. And that becomes vogue. And then you have a problem in that people still drive, they still park, they still need the room to park. And I think I'm more convinced that you have to accommodate the behaviors you're going to see rather than try to change them by making it difficult, because then you end up with situations like that.
Well, You need a fire truck.
That's right.
It's not even that. I think our streets ought to reflect the population that we have. And if we are people who recreate in the outdoors, or we're people who drive in the snow, you have a majority of SUVs and trucks in our area. And those mm-hmm. are wider and bigger vehicles.
Right.
So it's harder if the garages are small in a cottage to fit those in. So, yeah, I think, you know, just in the future when we're looking at all those things, to keep that in mind. I think that was a wise thing we did with Cedar Falls and looking at their street lists and looking at what the vehicle lists are to understand mirror to mirror what they were and in a fire truck and how big it is. And with
that also, the issue comes back to the problem that you were addressing too, and that this was this weird hybrid that it was called cottages and it was at a density of cottages, but it was more conventional single family homes. And so you're probably getting people that have more cars than what a true cottage resident would likely.
The bigger the home is, the larger the family fits in it. So
mm-hmm. And the bigger the vehicles that they'll have to. Okay, any other thoughts or comments on our cottage zone?
So far we heard some comments about leave it alone. Mm-hmm. Is that the consensus? Or?
Yeah, I'd like to hear what the public thinks, and that's going to be at our next meeting, which is going to be January 11th, so no more meetings.
Well, no, if you're not recommending changing anything, we wouldn't hold a public hearing.
Okay.
Folks, generally, you hold a hearing on a proposal, and that's where you really get people, give them something that they can understand and react to.
Yeah.
You'd have a real free-for-all if you...
I really think I like what Elizabeth was saying about not changing it. Let's see the rest of the data and understand what other things are happening in land uses. And then, you know, if, you know, when it comes back up in a year when we talk about land uses overall, we can make a change if it's warranted at that time.
Yeah, I mean, I think that large lot that was right next to the couches that were just built, I think it's just good to have a large lot. I just think of cottages as a community.
Mm-hmm.
And so if there were, a bunch of them in there, I don't think that would be a bad thing. I think the smaller, just a cluster of 12 is less interesting or meeting maybe the cottage zone in my mind than having, I don't know how many could fit in there. I don't know what that acreage is.
It's about 4. Seven cottages is what I calculated based on size. That's rough.
Clusters of 12 or something. Yeah, I think I just think it's a good spot in not a lot of big parcels like that. I don't know if there's many closer to town that are like that, unless so the developer would have to buy multiple parcels. May or may not. I don't know how easy that is, but you could just buy one.
Well, I think it makes more sense to understand what the land requirement is, because people aren't going to go out and buy a ton of parcels. It's too expensive. So that was one of the considerations of having all this zone. Some of these areas just didn't accommodate it, physically. I think there's some good reasons to take a look at it, but I think it's wise to look at traffic. I think it's wise to look at the development proposals that are on the table and see where we're going. And maybe if you think about it for a while and you know that it's in flux, you could come back with some more solid suggestions.
So next meeting, no more this month, this year?
No.
This year.
Your next meeting, we've got a number of things to bring with you. We're going to bring that tentative agenda for the 2018 calendar for the Planning Commission, so we'll show that to you. We've got a development agreement for the Tanner Electric headquarters. So they're proposing to do a headquarters building out on their property between 140th and North Bend Way, and they want to do that in phases. So just like you have the development agreement for the Snoqualmie Valley Athletic Center, where they were doing project in phases, this would phase their development so that the back half of the property, or actually maybe say the other way around, the front half facing North Bend Way would happen at a later date. And so to exempt them from to defer the improvements to the street that would normally be associated with that, it's a development agreement that allows them to do part of it at one point and then come in and do the rest of it at another point.
Okay. Maybe you explain that to me, is because they would have to dig it up once and then dig it up again?
No, just because they have frontage on both streets, our code would then require the frontage improvements to both streets for development, but this would break that up.
So they're located at 140th and North Bendway?
Yeah, between 140th and North Bendway. They've got existing property right there.
Which side of 140th?
Right now, the majority of it faces to North Bendway, and they've got an existing facility on there, and they're planning to add their headquarters building to it closer to 140th.
It's on this map. So they're going to the north.
Yeah. So their entrance would be right across from Wood River.
The project's map.
Yeah, there it is. So that's one thing that's coming to you. Another thing that's coming to you is the Park Street street standards. We're looking to update those street standards so that as development occurs in Park Street, we're able to accommodate the traffic flow necessary and the pedestrian sidewalks and so forth. So that'll come to you as well.
And that's associated with the development. We hit them right when they brought an application in with this additional right-of-way. So what was nice about it is we're going to take some right-of-way off their project frontage, but we're adding more on the other side.
Is there any option to hear about city parking amounts either before or after this project? Because that's usually the complaint on development around Park Street.
Well, we're good on that.
I'm just saying the public that lives along there is the ones who will be coming in and asking that question. It'd be nice if we could have any...
Part of it is a solution. The reason we gave the extra property is to provide public parking and to accommodate their development. So as a part of the lease or license agreement, they will have to keep out of that area and sign it for public parking and add some parking to the mix right now. So, you know, if we have opportunities to do creative things to add more parking, we're trying to do it.
Yeah, I'm just saying it'd be good for the discussion to have that. Okay. Sorry.
Yeah, so those two, I think there was one more thing.
Trees?
Trees are not going to be your next meeting, but probably the meeting after that.
Traffic.
So the traffic, yeah, that was it. So Mark Rigos is going to come from Public Works, and he'll present that to you, what that traffic study was, and findings, and what we're planning to do with our comp plan and our transportation improvement plan to address those.
Are there any historical charts or comparisons or...
Not historical, but there's current projections.
Yeah.
Okay. No actuals from past studies?
Well, we have counts that were done to document where we are today versus where we were. And there is some commentary on that. How are traffic patterns changing? And we're finding that the biggest change that I saw was the delays that we're getting in the downtown at the signal, and how people are seeking other routes to get around that. I mean, we even see it in our building, you know. Mm-hmm. A lot of folks are making that turn and going straight out.
Yeah.
And so there are a lot of movements that have changed from the earlier days, and the traffic patterns are changing. And when you look at the multifamily projects, which are somewhere over 300 units, they're really going to affect the traffic patterns, and that's why these improvements are needed. So it'll be interesting to have it all laid out before you and see it, and be able to ask the questions that you have, particularly relative to your own experiences in town.
I guess kind of the other thing I'm thinking would be interesting to see is, assuming that there were studies done back then, the projections that those made versus the reality of today, and the projections that we have now, projections of the future, and kind of using all of that to maybe get an even more accurate prediction of what the future is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting. Some of the traffic folks that are hired by folks with larger developments, obviously they're trying to help them out on keeping their fees down. And so you get these traffic assignments that we very much disagreed with.
Mm-hmm.
And we backed up our disagreement with the actual counts we're getting. And so they had to change the reports. And what they were trying to do is get out of the cost of roundabouts. And the fact of the matter is you can only put so many turn lanes in, and then the game's up. And that's only looking to a couple of years out. when you're looking at the ultimate traffic patterns, you have to have an ultimate solution. And so we kind of, it was who's going to blink? And we said, we've got documentation to show what's really going on. You have to change these. So we got them to change them. And that put the obligation squarely in their lap to do those improvements. So we saw enough of a change in the traffic patterns that people, you know, there's only so much credibility you can get when you make traffic assignments, and they just don't work. And so we understand traffic a lot better from doing that and kind of drilling down into some of these actual counts and how people are driving in the community. Yeah,
Dave, I had a clear sense of road rage behind me. About 3 days ago, I was on Main Street going north to the jazz club. And I came to realize that when we put in that new intersection, we took out a lane, a turning lane, and I wanted to go straight through. The guy behind me wanted to go right. I couldn't give him room because I had to wait for all the cars to sort out where I could squeeze through because I had east-west traffic to get to maneuver through. If I got in the middle, there was no place for me to hide. So I had to wait for a clear moment, and this guy was behind me, pushing me, physically pushing my car. I mean, how many times is that going to happen? So I don't know if we made a mistake there in taking away that those right turn lane widths by adding that, by bringing the sidewalk out closer to each other. Mm-hmm.
Which intersection are you talking about?
That's Main and
okay.
Where we did the improvements.
I never go straight across.
Yeah.
Don't want it anymore.
Used to be able to.
I never did.
Used to be able to, but now you can't at that intersection because there's
Well, I think, you know, that's exactly what I'm saying. You're going to see people's driving patterns change because some things don't work. And that's the struggle you get in every downtown. What kind of a priority do you give to pedestrians? What kind of slowing down do you want to have in an area where people shop? We had a real problem in Folsom in our major commercial area was what they used to go through town. We built two bridges. Cost about $70 million apiece to go over the American River just so people could take the other two routes to get through town. And they just wanted to be where the action is. So they just went down that, they just kept going down there. And until you get enough delay that it changes traffic patterns, people just don't do it. But I think you're going to see that kind of thing going on as we grow and we try to solve these problems, and people are going to find a way to get there, a new route to get to where they're going. I'm doing it all the time now. I'm always using the going by the swimming pool in that area to just completely avoid that North Bend way and come around and come down. I think we're going to see more of that.
Well, I've already seen more people crossing with the lights off or on or what have you in North Bend way to go to the new public house, the Iron Duck.
Yes.
They're just crossing a lot all the time, which we want to see that kind of movement.
Yeah.
We want to take care of it.
It's going to be more frustrating as you help the pedestrians and the businesses to be an active area. And this town just blows me away at the number of successful activities you have and the amount of the public that comes out to go to them. I mean, it's really cool, and it's getting better and better. So it's going to be more pedestrian.
Right. There's a lot of danger that comes with that.
Yes.
It's too late to say it because it's in, but the crosswalks in that new intersection are dark.
Not very visible today.
They are not visible at night.
Yeah.
And Daimler got ran down. No one knows there's anything going on until they're on you. They don't see you going there.
Right.
If you notice in Snoqualmie, I mean, their crossing lanes are gray. They're a light shade of gray. They aren't white. So there's no visual thing. But you see them a lot quicker as a driver. You see them ahead of time. You don't see those crossing lanes, the pedestrian lanes. Until you're on them.
When Mark's here, share those comments with him. He's being pushed on the beautification movement from the council.
Yeah.
And the nice thing, I think, the thing I really like about Mark is he gets stuff done.
Yeah.
I mean, that was done in the middle of a concrete strike, bad weather, you name it, and they got it done. And, you know, although there are some flaws like that, I think the downtown looks 100% better.
Part of that might have been that the lights haven't been on until just yesterday.
Yeah, that's so, PS&E. We got to get all over that.
What you can do to keep it beautiful is that when you have a push-to-walk button installed, and you have a lighted, then the crosswalk lights up like the crosswalk up by QFC when people want to cross over.
Mm-hmm.
It lights up for you. You see it coming as a driver, yeah. and you feel safer as a pedestrian. There's no support in terms of pedestrian safety in that crosswalk there by Main and Newport Way.
Well, I would certainly share those things with Public Works Director, because he's open to seeing what we can do. Safety is a big issue, so.
I was going to bring that up, the order, but same kind of thing. I mean, I just like to know specifically when the restriping, repainting of all the crosswalks is going to happen. I hope to hear it's next year, because almost every one of them, wherever you drive, it's like there's a path gone where the cars drive. So, I mean, it's one of the top priorities we should be having in this town. So,
and that's easy to do.
It needs to be done next year. So if it's like, oh no, it'll be 2019, that's like unacceptable.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then so the striping for one, but then getting some of the lights out there. We have one that flashes by the roundabout over by the La Schwab. I think the other one just constantly blinks. That's not good because drivers look at that, like, it blinks all the time. I mean, there's no pedestrian there. It only should blink if someone pushes it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we need to add some of those as we have money, but the thing is we need to get them striped, like, just right off the bat.
Well, we have to make that the standard in the code.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And we are looking at revising one of the things that's on the list that you'll see when it comes to you at the next meeting, is revising the public works standards. And those will come to you for, your review. But, you know, use the opportunity when Mark's here to unload. I mean, you let him know, because he needs that kind of feedback.
Anything else for good of the order? Our next meeting is next year, January 11th. Just to let you know, in our Planning Commission procedures in March, at our first meeting in March, we will vote on a new chair and vice chair.
You get out of the order.
Yes, sir.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Your appointment begins
January 4th.
Will you remain?
I have asked the school board to... I had asked the superintendent to move the meetings that they have to either the first and third Thursday or to a different date, and he is talking with the staff to see if that works. I will continue on at least till my end of term, which is in May. And I'll know between now and May if I can do both.
Don't do it.
Not as chair.
Yeah. Well, happy holidays, everybody. Enjoy the time off from this.
All right.
Have we had a motion?
Motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second. Motion by Commissioner Von Trapp. Second by Commissioner Heller. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. We are adjourned at 8. Well, you're going to
stay
up with me at the Iron Duck Public House as I walk across North Bend.